Welcome, everybody. This is The Disposable Web, the sequel to the Social Business Hangout. With me today is...
My name is Mark Ferrier. I've known Robert for a few years now. We have both done podcasts in the area, the Brand Advocate podcast, which you can still find online. Just Google search Brand Advocate podcast or check it out on iTunes and a lot of other spots. But I really enjoy podcasting as a whole. And I think Robert and I are two of the people in Brantford that get that and that understand that this is a really interesting way of the radio future. So when he invited me to come on and turn the tables and actually speak to him and interview him on this, I've been on his podcast, I think, four or five times.
At least five.
At least five times. And so now – and he's been on mine twice and on the television show. So now it's my turn to say, okay – we're on your podcast, but I'm going to host this one. I'm going to ask you some questions, and we're going to dig deep into the disposable web.
Exactly. And fundamentally, what we wanted to do is use the opportunity to flesh out some of the deeper topics of what is the disposable web. And as you say, we've had lots of conversations, both in audio and video format. And you've always come across as a very good interviewer, which that would be a compliment. I don't give a lot of compliments, as you well know.
Oh, you? Come on. And you used to never smile. Now you do that, too.
Exactly. So I will turn the tables over to you.
I appreciate it.
And take it away. This is going to be an Ask Me Anything. So as long as it's not something that gets me in jail, I will answer it.
So, okay. Ask you anything. I'll ask you a lot of different things. Again, to find me, it's Mark Your Vote, and that's Mark with a C. I forgot to mention that in the early bit. Use the hashtag...
No hashtag.
Okay.
We're so beyond hashtags
right.
At this point.
Ooh,
there's a
question. Hashtag beyond hashtag.
Yes.
Okay. Well, actually, I'm going to start there. Why are we beyond hashtags? What do you mean?
Well, the hashtag really was a way for people to organize themselves in groups on stuff like Twitter and stuff like that. What we've actually seen is a lot of people actually just fully embrace the concept of groups. So even though you got all these people that are just going hyper-tagging everything with a hashtag, mm-hmm. you know, hashtag social. Yeah, 45 hashtags. It's still amazing. On Instagram,
yes.
You know, because Instagram doesn't have that group functionality. But now you've got Twitter starting group chats, okay, which is spectacular. Mm-hmm. So as long as everybody's following each other, you can have your group chat. You know, Google Plus has their communities. Facebook has their groups. Let's be honest. When was the last time you actually clicked on a hashtag on Facebook to see who else was talking about it? You would look at the trending topics more than you would look at a trending hashtag. Mm-hmm. So I think the problem with hashtag is they've been overused. You know, there was a time where, to be honest, owning the hashtag was far more important than owning the at mention because that had a far wider. To me, I use hashtags now more as a bold statement because you get it slightly color different.
Right.
So it's a good way of putting an emphasis on a message as opposed to using it as a way to group things together and tag it. So in many ways, I think the private groups have taken over the use of what the hashtags were.
So the hashtag has become an emphasis now.
I think so.
A drop the mic moment.
A drop the mic. And you see that more and more. Like the purists will tell you if you're putting a hashtag that is not tied to some other topic, then you're doing it wrong. And in that sense, you're right. Because by putting the hashtag correctly, people that are talking about a similar topic will find you. But in many ways, where you really see that hashtag that jumps out and catches your eye
right.
is when someone writes a little sentence in proper case so that it kind of has that little wavy form. And now all of a sudden, it's a different shade. It's bolder. And you see it in your feed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So to your point, hashtag drops the mic.
Yeah.
That's your exclamation. It's your emoticon.
I find sometimes as well using a hashtag for personal categorization.
Mm-hmm.
So because of things like Tumblr, you know, I have a political Tumblr page. And if somebody asks me a question about temp agencies.
Mm.
I have hashtag temp agency. I search on Tumblr and I see everything I've ever posted about temp agencies.
But in that particular case, you would be better off using tags, not hashtags.
Oh, you know what? And that's what they are.
That's what they are. You're
yes.
tagging. So WordPress,
yeah.
Tumblr, all of those blog-type systems have tagging. You know, WordPress has categories. Tumblr does not. But they all have tagging. And yes,
you're right.
Tumblr as – and I've seen the one you're talking about. Mm-hmm. You've gone back – got 10 years worth of content.
1994, I think.
Yeah,
would be my
there
first.
You go. And you've organized it. So the concept of knowledge management
yes.
and tagging of contextual data, that has not changed.
Right.
A hashtag was an evolution on the tag.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
And then the trick becomes trying to find ones that will be unique and not utilized in other spaces sometimes as well. So I'm doing a thing called, based on the 365 Grateful, mm-hmm. I put in Mark's 365
yes.
Grateful because on Instagram, I kind of sometimes want to review. If I'm feeling down, if I'm feeling a little depressed, I want to review all the things I've been grateful for this year. But I'm really hoping there's not another person who's Mark with a C who does the same thing because it'll suddenly get
encroached.
Yeah, encroached.
Well, and that's where the hashtags plays into that. And to your point, if you're running Tumblr mm-hmm. as a true Tumblr versus let's say you were to associate your domain. So the disposable web in this particular yep. case is hosted on Tumblr. So I have the domain, the disposableweb.com, mapped to my Tumblr yes. thing. So when it shows up as the disposable web / tagged / Mark, it will only pull up the tags of Mark for that domain.
Interesting.
But if you were to do it as the disposableweb.tumblr.com/taggedmark,
right.
now you're querying Tumblr's tags,
right.
not the domain's tags. So
right.
it's that subtle aspect. In your case of Instagram, imagine there comes a time where your Instagram has its own domain onto itself. Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden you wouldn't have to worry about other people encroaching on those tags because they would be contained within
your
domain.
Own profile or domain.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to change this topic slightly. You've been talking about the disposable web piece, and I'm going to ask you a question that used to mean something else than what it'll mean now. What is the next MySpace? And what that used to mean was what's going to hit big, and now it means what's going to die first.
Yeah, and that's a very good point. You know, you've seen in the last year alone a lot of things that have fallen by the wayside that we took to be common day apps, Clout.
Yep.
When was the last time we've used Clout? Foursquare is no longer Foursquare. Swarm is trying to reclaim mm-hmm. what Foursquare was. It's the same company, but
I find very difficult though to get in.
I couldn't get back into it.
No, neither could I.
There was
frankly.
No point. You haven't seen Foursquare, the next version of Foursquare, grow to be what it wanted to be, which was kind of Yelpish in nature, and they killed Swarm in the first or the
Foursquare.
Old Foursquare in the process, because you add – anytime you ask a community to convert from 1.0 mm-hmm. to 2.0, you've got a fall off.
Yes.
Okay, because you're assuming these people are active. They're not. You're assuming that
– Well, you also sometimes have a broken heart. And what I mean by that, not in the real sense of a broken heart, but I'll give you the Foursquare example.
Mm-hmm.
I was using it for a couple specific things. One, almost to have like a treasure hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Here are a bunch of things I want to do in my community, and I'm going to tick them off, and I'm getting excited, and I'm getting those badges, and oh, I'm seeing who's here with me at the ACC because I'm at a concert. That's really neat. And I was tracking – the only time I ever took photos on Foursquare was when it was me going to the gym.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, I'm going to track going to the gym.
And now you're doing that with Instagram.
Yes, because you know what? Doing it with Foursquare, it broke my heart that it left – it changed right when I was getting into almost a peak user for my experience. And then you go, you know what? I don't trust that company anymore. I don't trust that organization, whatever the app is called. I feel a little screwed.
And I think right there is what you just tapped on is the level of trust – that we have, and this is part of the concept of the disposable web, is if you no longer trust your provider,
mm-hmm.
regardless of whether or not it's free or whatnot, and you're mm-hmm. seeing it to a certain degree with Facebook,
mm-hmm.
people don't trust Facebook the way they used to.
Yeah,
because
people aren't starting Facebook accounts.
People are not
younger
starting.
Younger people.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, look at what the trend is. Snapchat being an example, right? It's going back to private groups. What is Snapchat but a private one-on-one, one-to-many private group? So what's sad to me is we had this wonderful world where we were going more and more public. Everything was on a feed. Everything was on a public page. Everything could be seen by everybody that was on your friend list, as an example.
Mm-hmm.
There was no filtering or whatnot.
No gatekeeper, which was so exciting from a comms point of view.
Totally. So now all of that stuff's been removed. And we're now seeing people go into private groups. So now that opportunity, you know, you used to say something, the power of the bump.
Yeah.
Okay. The power of the bump on social media has disappeared because the odds of you coming across something you didn't know is lower
mm-hmm.
because A, you're not in the group. You don't know the group exists,
right.
or it's not showing up in your feed anyways. You know what I mean?
And even when you do pay, sometimes you can't target the way you want to. I have an ad right now for my political page, facebook.com/Brant Mark. But you know, I'm getting students of mine from Hamilton going, hey, sir, I saw an ad, and I don't want them on it. One, not because they're students, but because they can't vote for me.
Correct.
Right? And I have to pay to get, you know, ads basically in North Bay and Thunder Bay, but that doesn't actually help. I used to be able to focus so much on just Brantford and Brant, and you start going, is it worth the money?
Well, and here's the other thing, too. We're at a point right now where the side banner ads
yes.
have stopped working a very long time ago. When was the last time you clicked on a Google ad on the side? okay, or a Facebook ad on the side. What still works, however, is the native advertising, yes, meaning the ones that show up in your feed, whether or not that's a promoted Instagram, a promoted pin, a promoted Facebook, a promoted tweet or whatnot. Those are the ones you still see. But you don't necessarily get a click-through. Like even on Twitter, I read an article a while ago, said this guy had his most popular a tweet of all times. You know, it just broke the bank in terms of number of retweets and likes and whatnot. But the conversion on the link was less than 1%.
Wow.
So this was a quote-unquote viral, you know, I'm doing massive quote, viral tweet on his behalf that had a conversion point of 1 because it's easy to click like. It's easy to click share. It's another thing to have a person click on a link that goes to content, have the person digest the content. That's work.
Sign up, do all those other things.
Yeah. And those are conversion points. Yeah. And I think, you know, the ones that, that are successful, and there's a reason why cats, as an example, are so easy. It's a low maintenance conversion point. It's a low maintenance emotional. So, but when you get into pure business, and this is where the challenge of business to business on social media really has not changed. It's always been there. You are dealing with the attention economy. I only have so many FUCKs to give.
What's that an acronym?
It's my own show. I could probably swear if I wanted to, but I want to keep this PG. But my point being, you're asking me to take one of X amount of FUCKs that I have to give to whatever thing that you believe in. Now, whether or not that is you crowdfunding for the health of your child, which is a recent topic that that you know about, or to your next event, or to your campaign, or to just your stupid promo or your blog entry or whatnot.
Your stupid promo.
But my point being, you are asking people to take time out of their lives. And that
And time out of a digital pie that is already pretty full.
Totally.
I mean, and you know, the oldest concept in a lot of academics and economies are utils, right? How much utility do I get from this? Why do I get the apple fritter and the small coffee versus the super large coffee? Because it is have more value to me. Well, what has more value? Maybe it's me playing my video game on my iPad for that 5 minutes, or maybe it's me, you know, texting with my wife, or maybe it's me, but all these digital things. Maybe it's me reconnecting with an old friend, or maybe it's me crafting something that I hope will have some impact or some reach. But we have so many options.
Well, it's not just that. Because the barriers to entry have become so low, and a good part of the disposable web is the very fact that these platforms are free. They're disposable, meaning you could build an entire infrastructure.
MySpaceable
overnight. You know, you build it up, you use it, you tear it down, it's gone. You do political campaigns. Most of your stuff is disposable.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, by the nature of what you do, your websites and your advertising needs to be gone. After the election.
Now, I don't do that, but you know what? There are a lot of really successful politicians who literally start the day a campaign starts and literally stop the day it stops.
Yeah. So it's a disposable platform in that sense. But at the end of the day, it does come back to what are people using these platforms for? They're using it to connect with people. Okay, so if you're no longer connecting with the people you want to connect because of EdgeRank, now all of a sudden you've broken the trust barrier of why I'm here. So you're going to shift to a platform where you have that feeling of connectivity. You know, and I did, I've done massive amount of interviews since you've known me. And I did one recently with the guitarist of the Headstones.
Yes,
and it was the first time in a very long time that I actually had a secondary community totally embrace the content and started retweeting my own stuff afterwards that they had no real interest in it. But it was like, oh, I'm now tapping into a real community. Most of the stuff that I've done, to be honest, and I've always said this, if the only person that listens to this is me and you and we get value out of it, mission achieved.
Well, and further, you found a way, and I think I have two in different ways, but I think we found a way to get actual value out of the experience of social media, which is you utilized it to become a really good interviewer. And to people talk about social networking, but you actually networked in a really social way where you now have 150 contacts you didn't have in a way that you didn't have them. And I'm sure you not just learned a lot in those hours and hours and hours of podcasting about the subject matter, but also about people's stories, about life in general. It's like you read 150 really good books.
Well, and it's funny you mention it because to me
– that's real value. Though.
That is real value. Part of the last 5 years, you know, in the early stages of it was do I go for the MBA or do I go for something else? And I opted for the something else, which was a crowdsourced education.
Right.
and the interview process, because I am reaching out, like I did one with Eric Gilbert, who's the operations head of operations for motorsport.com. They have 650,000 likes on Facebook and have millions of hits per day. They just expanded to Russia and so forth. So this is a global presence, one of the top three motorsport websites in the world. What am I going to not learn from talking to this guy?
Yeah, you're right.
Okay, I'm now talking about multilingual sites. I'm now talking about conversion points on advertising, the value of great images. You know, it's motorsports. It's all about the photos.
And you're talking about motorsports. Which is something you like.
Which is something I like. Having said that, the conversion on that piece was nil. Not one person on my feed that is a motorsports junkie commented on it, liked it, shared it, listened to it. Hmm. Do I care? No, because what I got to your point was a one-on-one conversation with a person that is running a multinational web presence with more likes than any of the pages that you and I own combined.
Right. And you got a deliverable out of it.
I got a deliverable. But more importantly, and you said it best, I got to practice.
Yes.
You know, like even, you know, this is off topic for those that listen to it, but I'm emceeing the Blast, the hockey game on Friday. I'm terrified of crowds.
Sure.
I'm terrified of speaking.
Sure. But
because
you baby-stepped it to
Stepped it to a point, right?
Right.
So I'm comfortable with my voice. I used to your point, not like the sound of my voice and not smile.
Yep.
Now, anybody that knows me now 5 years later, could you imagine Rob not smiling and not talking?
Yeah.
Well, not –
I got you and Lucas Duguid, who at Sophia's Bakery on Instagram. I got you both smiling. I'm happy.
As an example. Yeah. Look at the evolution of Lucas just in the last 6 months.
Yeah.
He's wearing suits.
Yeah, the rebrand.
Right. So please continue though, because I know you got a few more on there.
Let me just clarify though.
Yeah, yeah.
The next MySpace is banner ads.
No, I want to say, you know what? It's going to be the dismantling of Google Plus. I hate to say it because I've always had a sweet
you
spot.
You have had a sweet spot.
I love my Google Plus now. The conversion rate has been crap, but it was a great tool to build SEO layers, and nothing beat the live-to-air capability from a pure infrastructure.
And also, graphically, it looked nice. It felt nice. It was very clean.
It's a proof positive. It goes back to the Betamax Sony and JVZ and all that. It's not always the best technology that wins, okay? So they came to the table with a very, very well-built thing. But in the last year, the head of their department has left, and Google is very well known for slashing products midway. Their lab stuff is always
in
beta.
Which goes back to our other piece about trust.
Exactly.
Right? And I'll tell you, I mean, my favorite thing in the world right now when it comes to social media is Instagram, just because of the lack of negativity.
Mm-hmm.
But one day if they go pull the plug, then I don't think I'll ever be
on
another –
Well, it's Facebook. Instagram is owned by Facebook. What do you think is going to happen
And you know what? I probably won't be back in the photo sharing world in the same way that I'm enjoying it now, because I'll feel a little betrayed.
But you know what? There will always be a photo sharing app. When you think about – if you were to look at it as Maslow's hierarchy of needs but apply it to the digital landscape, there are certain aspects of what you look for in a product, okay? And if that product doesn't exist on the market – or has passed on, someone else will come up. Like I came across someone's feed last night where it was kind of like Vine, if you will. It was like an 8-second video, but it had the ability to overlay a third layer. So he had like the Starship Enterprise flying through his living room.
That's cool.
He was taking video of his kids playing football and a meteor landed on the field. And all that is click this video –
Merge it with
a library of green screen elements, place it. Well, tell me that's not more fun than Instagram.
Yeah, you're right. And they're the things that if you when I was growing up in the late 90s, early 2000s, you know, that would take 6 weeks to do in your communications lab at high school?
I use this example a lot. So locally, it's surprising most people don't know this because, you know, when the word comes up, who do you need to build a website? We know the names that come up. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
My name never comes up yet. I'm the only person in town that's done a $1 million website.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the point there is back in 1999, it cost us $1 million to build a website because none of the plugins existed.
Yeah.
We had to build all the plugins. We had to build the infrastructure. Just the licensing software from Symantec for the Java programming, I think the budget was $35,000 and I didn't even get a box with it. It was like just a license key, right? So we've changed that same website now would have been done on general WordPress for 1,000. So it's the same thing with video, audio. This right. is the disposable web. We're not even using my own gear right now. We're using public gear.
And that's what I want to talk to you about next is the access. So as a person who's involved in policy and social work and sort of equity stuff, I mean, I've sat there next door to community gardens because people haven't had access to agriculture.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Now what's happening? We are in a library, the Brantford Public Library. Thank you so much for having us today.
And I'm doing this to promote them as well. And we both picked this place to do this podcast, actually.
Yeah. Absolutely. But, what's the future for that, for the community shared resources around digital media? Because, it was a shock at first when cassettes, books on tape, and then comedy albums, and then DVDs were things that you got at the library. Now, I'm part of the Paris, the Brant County Library. I'm getting all my books there, but I rent my DVDs by going in, but I get my books on my iPad. Mm-hmm. However,
they'll let you loan out iPads
here. Okay, so that's another step. Yeah. What are the steps to making, especially younger people, but all people, more digitally aware and more access to digital means, the means of production, for lack of a better term. The library starting it, where do you see that going?
Well, I think a lot of it comes down to creativity. Okay, most of our education, and I'm a victim of it myself, like I was not a creative guy. I was as logical as you get. Like I worked in IT with multi-million dollar systems. You could not get more logical than that.
Sure.
Once you get out of that logical mindset and you foster that creative mindset and you give it a place for you to be in a sandbox. Like, I didn't know how to do video editing. Yeah. I learned video editing. I didn't know how to do sound engineering. I learned sound engineering. How? I picked up a software. I looked up a YouTube video. It self-educated me. Boom, I'm doing it. Now I get to do all of that at a library where, as a taxpayer of my community, I get the card. As a member of the library, which costs me nothing, I get 2 hours a day with a room that has more gear. And I'll be blunt about this, than most creative agencies in Brantford. There is more technology in this room than Smashing Pixels and Octopus Red combined. Think about it.
Actually, you're right.
I am.
There's more than three computers. So.
And it's all updated software.
Right.
There's a full Adobe suite on there.
Wow.
Full CS6 available to anybody that walks in the door. We've got camera. We got a mic. We got lights. We got a green screen. There's a guitar in there that plugs directly into the USB. I've got Bill Minery coming in here learning how to do video editing of his music videos. And at some point in time, he'll probably grab that guitar, plug it into his GarageBand, and do something in front of this green screen. And it cost him his time.
So what I see next, and I wonder if you think this will happen, is I see the 3D printers being...
There's one right behind you.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, there's one
I'm
literally...
Late. There's
literally one behind you, and there's another one downstairs.
Wow.
You know, and you walk into the library here, and I got no problems talking about the library. They've been a great partner of mine. You walk in here, they've got a library full of designs. You pick the design you want. It normally takes about 2 hours to print, depending on what it is. Boom, you're done. People were downstairs printing cases for their iPhones.
Wow.
Right on the 3D printer at no cost.
So where – let's extrapolate that. Use the – because I think the creativity is the best hope the North American economy
has.
So if we're looking at this, let's use creative minds and let's extrapolate. Where do you see that going 10, 20, 50 years from now?
I think the beauty of the disposable web is it's broken down the barriers to entry to all of this technology. Now, you still have – because it's such a low barrier, you've got all of the crap coming in with it.
Right.
Okay, so thus the noise, right? Why is Facebook what it is now? Because it's got a low entry barrier. Why is YouTube full of crap videos?
I would never want to be a part of a club that would have me, right?
I would never be part of a club that had me. But it allows you to see what other people have done, learn from what they're doing, and take it up a notch. It allows you to say, you know what, I'm just going to try. Like there was a girl that was here last week. She was all excited. She took video of our good friend Captain Kindness getting ice bucketed. Yep. And she's like, I edited it here and I put it up on my YouTube channel. And I'm like, okay, I got to remind myself that I've done – I'm not exaggerating. I've done thousands of videos across all the channels and whatnot. But there was a time where I did my first video, and that was her. And I'm like, have I evolved to such a point where I snub my nose at that, or do I embrace it?
Yeah, and you need to embrace it.
And you need to embrace it. And I think that comes down to it. As long as you've got community members And I'll be honest, the video editing community, the video production community is the worst because it's full of people that went to school. No, I'm not talking about Ida. Okay, people that went to school that got an ego. It's got to be done this way. It's got to be following these rules. But creativity is not about following rules. Yeah. Okay, so yes, if you want to get a job at CBC, CTV, whatnot, you've got to be part of a union. You got to follow certain rules. There's certain expectations. But if you want
to
be
a placement, you have to this, you have to
exactly.
That,
right? So for those people, yay.
Yeah.
But if you're coming into my sandbox, which is, you know what, I don't care if the lighting's a bit off and I don't care if this, but I'm having fun learning this medium and it's my right, not privilege, but it's my right to do it.
Right.
Let me do it.
See, I've never ever told this story.
Well, this is why we had these interviews.
And you brought up Ida, and I'll just put that for the people at home. Ida Adamowicz is here. She's following me for something called A Day in the Life, which will be on the BCN website and their paper.
Hi, Ida.
Hi, Ida. So when we bring her up, I just want to make sure for those at home, when Robert brought up her name, that they know why she's here. And she does video editing. I used to do video editing. I used to run a television film production company that was based out of the University of Ottawa called TV Zoom. Which then, after I left, was called Zoom TV. Really big creative change there. Anyhow.
You know, I would never watch the album, but I would watch Zoom TV.
Oh, no. Now, what's interesting, though, is as I remember, you're talking about that snobbery. Mm. These are university students. Most of them were in communications or journalism in some way, shape, or form. And from that group, we got people like Brett Kelly. Mm. Brett Kelly, who became a very well-known Canadian indie horror filmmaker. He was the technical director when I was the executive producer. I helped produce one of his first films, The Bone Setter, which is now a comic book and it's got a sequel craziness. We had people who ended up working at the CBC and Natalie Collado, who you hear on the Toronto and Ontario feeds all the time. And there were several others. But I remember what used to happen, not with the two people I just mentioned and some who are now working at TSN and all these places, but with other folks who never actually made it in the field after this. I remember they would come in and they would scoff at the work of the person who's doing their first video. Mm-hmm. And these are people who maybe had done it in high school, and now there's people who've never done it. They're coming in because they had public access, kind of like the library, except we also had staff who were there to help train you and help you with the volunteerism and get you going. Mm-hmm. And they would come in, they'd look at, huh, that took you 3 weeks? That's a piece of crap, right? Or they'd like giggle behind their backs, or, oh, that's so lame. That's not how you do a Chiron, and that's not how you do this and that. And I remember telling the new students, I would say, or the new volunteers, I would say, listen, it is not about your first project. Mm. It's about your last project. Mm. Your first project, my first project sucked. Your first project is better than mine, right? But let's see at the end of the semester who's laughing. And at the end of the semester, the students who stuck with it, or the end of the year or the 2 years, some of them were getting their stuff on television, film. They were shooting professional commercials, getting paid for it. They were utilizing the equipment that we had to do social good. And, hey, there's the Big Brothers. I'm going to go shoot a commercial for them just for fun, right? And they'd use it on the web back when that was, you know, just sort of burgeoning. And it was so fascinating to watch those people at the end of the year when we do our, like, what did we all create by the end of the semester, the end of the year? And you'd watch the students who were getting laughed at and picked on and bullied go, yeah, here's my 8-minute awesome mini documentary that made people laugh and cry. Screw you guys who made fun of me.
Well, and I think that, you know, I had an interview earlier in the Disposable Web with a gentleman that at the time ran Film Threat, which was all about the movie industry and whatnot. And we've talked a lot about Kevin Smith, and, you know, his first movie was shot in a grocery store or a convenience store, I should say, right?
And at poorly.
Poorly. But
it's a great film.
But it's a great film. So, you know, and in my particular case, I'll be perfectly blunt, because I've never used top-end gear.
Right.
Because I've always made it a point, because I do this as part of my consulting, is I'll go into a business and say, no, you don't need to break the bank on X to create your content. What is the least amount of gear and the gear that you can afford and make the best content using that? So I remember before I would MC the Muay Thai fights, I would videotape the Muay Thai fights. And here I would be I'd be surrounded with people with their big cameras, you know, the shoulder-mounted ones and their Canon XDs or whatever. No offense, Ida. And but here's the thing. I would walk in and I would have my tripod that I would turn into a monopod. So I wouldn't and I would put my little pinhole.
I used to do the belt one.
Yeah. And I would put my little pinhole camera and I would put it up 8 feet high over all of the ropes of the ring. And I would have this top-down shot. You couldn't do that with their gear. They would be so terrified of breaking it.
Right. Or they would break the stick.
Or they break the stick or whatever. They couldn't focus it. So it's like, here I am with this autofocus pinhole stuff. I was getting the shots.
Yeah.
they were getting crap shots with great gear. So it was the best pixelation mm-hmm. and the best lighting and whatnot, mm-hmm. but you had these cables in front and it was showing the short of the people. And here I am, I'm basically putting the camera in the face of the fighters. Mm-hmm. What's better?
Yeah, no, absolutely. What's,
you know, so it,
and it's interesting too because all that technology jumps so quickly. I mean, the stuff I get on my iPhone 5 is better than the stuff that cost $5,000 when I was doing this at school.
There's more equipment in that phone than what got us on the moon. Mm-hmm. Okay, and yet what do we do with it?
look up Marvel movie websites. Yeah,
you know. But to your point, it's that model of yes, you can have the purists, and there will always be the purists in internet marketing. There will always be the purists in video. There will always be the purists. But it's that other tier.
However, though, and I'm going to challenge you a little bit here. I'm going to ask you a challenging question.
Always.
Are they? Oh no, not always. Sometimes I ask really lame ones, but this is a good one. Are they purists? Or are they potentially artists? And what are you? Are you a journeyman when it comes to the technical side? But you're a content
person? I'm a hack. I've always said it.
No, but we're all hacks. We're all hacks.
I think at the end of the day, it comes down to this. At the top of that pyramid, there is a small group of people that have made it, that get to use the red cameras and are shooting in 4K and have got the million-dollar budgets and whatnot.
The cream.
And to get to the cream, you've got to go through the purist mode. Yep. There's no other way. So God bless you. We need people like you, you know, reach for the top.
Sometimes I don't always want the cream. I want some
but
jello.
That's kind of my point.
Yeah.
I'm a B-movie guy.
Yeah.
I prefer the cheesy. I prefer watching real emotions. Like, I love documentaries.
Yes.
Most documentaries are not created by Michael Bay.
No, that's true.
A Michael Bay documentary would be horrible.
Might.
But
although
it would look amazing.
Pain and Gain was pretty good, yeah.
Yeah.
But yes, yeah. You know, I get your point. So that aesthetic, so you're more about the content.
I'm a guerrilla marketer.
You're all about the bass, no treble. Is it? No.
Which is funny because I actually need treble in my voice. But yeah, to me, at the end of the day, it comes down to we live in a world where the barriers of technology have been removed. I'm not about to let, and I'm not going to use the bully word, okay, because you know I'm a Gen X. I grew up in a world where I would get beat up out of the bus, and I deal with it. I wouldn't go crying at home, so. You know, but my point being, I'm not about to be quote unquote bullied.
You're not going to be pushed around.
I'm not going to be pushed around. If I want to create a podcast, I create a podcast. Yay.
Right.
If no one listens to it, okay. Because at the end of the day, what is my motivation? My motivation is not to create the best podcast. My motivation is to have a good conversation. Like this
and,
one,
and
our relationship is yet again going to be a stronger relationship after I hit stop than it was when you walked in the door.
Yeah, you're
just
right.
Why? Because we had a half hour conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more about – so as antisocial as I actually am in real life, I'm actually more social because of this mindset.
Which is a personal skill, something that's of real value. And that's the thing I'm always trying to – I used to work at a summer camp and I used to say to the students when they're coming to this camp, they say, oh, I hate having to go. And I say, well, if you just come here and you don't bring any of it back home, then you just had a vacation.
Mm.
And that's okay. You can just have a vacation, but you're not really changing anything. And it's sort of the same thing with this. You know, you're kind of doing the professional but punk rock thing, the DIY, the do-it-yourself.
Yes.
But you also use it in your real life, and that's where the real value is. The real value is, you know, we've had these conversations, but we've also had long walks around the Grand River where we've delved into some stuff that I know has given me insights, given you insights, but that wouldn't happen had you not had a podcast.
No. Well, and to your point, the podcast, you know, and we wrapped up the social business hangout and, you know, I put it to bed and all that, but one of the final comments that I made on it in BC of all places mm-hmm. was, who was the one that was across the mic the most? Well, it was me.
Yeah.
And that wasn't a, hey, gotcha.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but it was a factual statement. There was only one person that had those 100 conversations. And more importantly, only one person that's able to take all those 100 conversations and string it into an overall context mm-hmm. that spans just the one topic.
And there was only one person who developed the skills to book all of those, all the before, the coffee after, mm-hmm. or the beer after, whatever it was, where there's value there. Because by doing stuff, we end up doing other stuff,
mm-hmm.
right? And the people forget that. People forget that, like, at home, you're getting this deliverable, but you know what? Robert's had 15 minutes before this, and he might have 45 minutes after it, where he's still getting something else. So for those people at home who are kind of thinking about and listening to what Robert's saying about, you know, I want to do something, so I'm going to do it. Well, that's how you learn. Like the more you learn, the more you can do. But the more you do, the whole heck of a lot more you learn.
To your point, I always say there's the pre-show, the show, and the after show, or the after party, right? And I'll use the example that the guitarist of the Headstones. Okay, so I had been a fan of the band for 20 plus years.
Amazing, okay? Amazing band, one of my favorites.
Exactly. So here I am. A simple tweet is all it took to get him lined up. We had the conversation. Where I'm winding down, and I ask him the simple question: is there anything else that you know that we should talk about before we call it a day? And he's just kind of humming and hawing, and he's back and forth. And all of a sudden, he goes, "You know, I was talking to Hugh Dillon last night on the PS," and I'm like, "Ooh, what do you play?" "Oh, I play Destiny with Hugh Dillon." I'm like, "That's so cool. I play Destiny too." The conversation with Trent Carr has continued since that podcast on Twitter DMs, talking back and forth about whenever he goes on a raid and finds a new piece of gear or is elevated his character. Awesome. He sent me a picture of my guy just got up to a level 32. Take a look at this. And I'm like, so let me understand this. 20 years ago, I was in a bar watching you getting spit on by you, Dylan, and playing a guitar in a dingy bar. And now you're sending me text telling me about how great your Destiny character is. That would not have happened had there not been the post conversation. Now, I left it in the interview because I thought it was actually awesome. And all of a sudden, the fans of the Headstones like, I can't believe you got them talking so comfortably about that other stuff. And I'm like, the old Rob, the one that started podcasting, would not have had the skills to get that person comfortable enough to talk about something that just today you talked about something that you've never talked about before. Mm-hmm. Now, how much of that is interviewing skill or just familiarity, comfort?
Right.
You know,
a lot of it is that. And I think that's really fascinating that, again, there are all these byproducts. So sometimes the thing isn't the thing. It's all the byproducts of the thing.
What is the Internet of the Things?
Right. So we are hitting around that 30-minute mark.
Yep.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you if there's anything else you want to share for this episode.
I think what I want to do is have you ask me one last question because I know there's a few on there. Is there one that you did not hit that you really want to ask?
One of the Ask Me Anythings I think is the most fascinating one. I believe it was from Joseph Stevens and he said, who is it in the past? I'm paraphrasing here. I'm not going to read it word for word. But who is it in the past when the internet didn't exist that would have had the most impact utilizing the disposable web, the internet, social media? Who do you think it is?
Well, you know, it's funny. I answered that one on Facebook at the time and I'll restate it. I went immediately to the conquerors, right? So the Alexander the Great, the Genghis Khans or whatnot. And it's funny because even Joseph, when he replied afterwards, says, yeah, I went to military leaders as well. And then he made a comment saying, but yet the internet hasn't necessarily stopped what's happening in the Ukraine and take a look at what's happening with ISIS as well. So, you know, the question fundamentally came down to had a conqueror like a Genghis Khan had the internet, they would have been taking selfies of every place that they would raid. But more importantly, they would be able to continue the conversation with the lands that they were no longer close to. Because what happens in many of those cases is the conqueror moved on to another province or another part of the country or another country altogether. And the advisors were the ones left behind, and that's where the corruption started. And it would basically bankrupt, right? It's like same thing with military. If you don't have a great supply chain, if your military goes far too fast and the food's not arriving, you got a dead military, right? So what the social and the internet would allow them to do is continue that conversation, build that collaboration as they kept moving, that mobile workforce, right? But it would also have the ability to do competitive intelligence, right? Like what's the sentiment of the city or whatnot that I'm about to take over? So it's funny how I went right to the military. And Joseph came back, well, what about a Martin Luther King or whatnot? Or a DeCarta, I think it was the one, how we'd even dealt with the trolls and whatnot. Honestly, I don't think any of the old past individuals that come up in conversations are any different than some of the leaders and opportunists that we have now. You know, DeCat would have had a marketing firm running a mailing list for the latest webinar on, you know, I think, therefore I am. Or you know, it'd be a link bait of, do you really think, therefore are you really real?
Maybe
you know?
Maybe people forget that before the social media as we conceive it, television was a social media, and that's where Martin Luther King grew famous.
Well, not just that.
Malcolm X and books were social media.
Social media was, as you say, books, newspapers, media, and there was only three to pick from, right? So we went from a world where we had a very focused channel to a very wide channel. But the problem, and this is part of the disposable web issue as well, is in the last 5 years, the ownership of the medium has changed? How many top 50 people lists have you seen on your feed of these are the people you have to follow? Not, you tell me they're not the ones controlling the medium?
Yeah, you're right.
And more importantly, who puts them on the list?
I was on one of those lists, and it was very random.
List-free since.
Yes. I've had two lists. One was most engaged Canadian politicians on social media, and the other was I was ranked the number one Canadian social worker in the world on social media.
Which is great PR.
Good PR, good talking point. Don't know how valuable.
Well, it depends
on
what you
do. Real.
It, at that point in time, it comes down to what you do with that. Do you use that little bit of we've all been on live TV. Okay, so do we do the as seen on TV to get us that little bit of extra reputation, or do we go as seen on X, you know? So that never really has changed. The medium has shifted, the amount of people being able to access to it. But believe it or not, the barriers to all of these layers have actually grown in the last 3 years.
Well, and this is sort of where I'm thinking now. I'm looking and I'm going, well, you know, you might have a point about Genghis Khan and the Conquerors, but it depends on their charisma.
And I think that at the end of the day comes back to the social piece.
You know who in a way was one of the first sort of social media kings? Not Martin Luther King, I just had king in the brain. That was one of Mark Twain.
Yes.
Right? Mark Twain was known as a storyteller, a regaler.
You still see memes with Mark Twain to this day.
And, I mean, not only in book but in stage show. Yeah. Like, he was like the Adam Carolla of the time in that he was able to do that, or Howard Stern, like the king of all media. Every medium that was available, he hit it out of the park on. However, there are people like that now that, because there are so many channels, they're not being appreciated the same way. I mean, they may have but you only need 10,000 fans to make it a career.
If at the end of the day you take a look at the bar, the quality bar, there are people that are significantly better than Mark Twain that you'll never hear about.
Yeah.
But because Mark Twain made a list, was promoted in such a way, got word of mouth, had charisma, whatever.
Went viral.
Because he went viral and there was no other list to be had, he became an icon.
Right.
Okay. The ability to become an icon nowadays, even though the means.
What does that mean?
What does it actually mean? And are you an icon for a day? Like we said earlier, you're only as good as your last tweet. You're only as good as your last good piece of content, right?
Or maybe this is where I'm coming from, having been so engaged in social media. I almost think it's now the opposite. I think it's you're only as good as your last, you know, real handshake or good conversation or real life experience. And sometimes they're accentuated and buttressed and helped by social media. But sometimes actually that gets in the way.
Well, I know that I've probably alienated more people because of social media than if I had just stayed antisocial.
Yeah, and ditto even in the political sphere. Because in the political sphere, you know, I say this to people, you know, if you want to vote for somebody who'll say anything, there's options.
Yeah.
If you want to vote for somebody who'll say nothing, there are options. But I know there are people who've supported me in 90% of the things, but then I speak out about gay rights and I'm pro-gay rights and suddenly I've lost them because they're not. They're with me 90% of the way, but on that one, they're so not. And the more you say, the more vile you can bring up, unless people like the personality or the you know, hey, this person speaks their mind enough that it trumps the quibbles.
To your point, and this is maybe the last thing I'll say on it, because I know we need to wrap up. To me, it comes down to this. You can alienate a lot more people now and still be able to get a critical mass to achieve something. And the difference is the critical mass to achieve something in the past – to be able to get those, let's say, 1,000 people. Okay, so with social media, you start with 10,000, it whittles down to 1,000 people that will actually support you financially for some reason. To get that 1,000 in the old days would have been an ad in the paper or you know, door-to-door or whatever. But that 1,000 is still 1,000. And when you look at stuff like crowdfunding and crowdsourcing and collaborative tools and all that, what you can do with that small base – I'll go back to the Headstones conversation – for 20 years, they were doing their albums through the recording studios. They just recently paid off their debts.
Right.
Okay. But yet the last two albums were paid for before the production even started.
By because fans of like you and I.
Because – so it's been already bought. It's been already sold. Do I need 10,000 copies sold at a 0.01% return? Or do I need 100 sold at 50% return?
Right. Do I need some patrons as opposed
to – Do I need patrons? And I think that right there is the word. We've shifted to a world where if you can build your patronage – and think about it. You brought up the old question. People that used to live in the past. I was a big Da Vinci believer. Da Vinci had patrons.
Yeah, he did.
Okay. And what was he able to do with those patrons? Columbus had patrons and he discovered and ravaged America. But my point being, are we going back to, as you said, the patronage of the old, and now you're now using the tools with that patronage? And at the end of the day, it comes down to this. What is patronage but a community? How you build that community, how do you tap into someone else's community? That to me is the real trick of the internet.
Well, you got right back to where I wanted to end this, and that's on community. When you use the example of the headstones, you know, there's a headstones community, but then there's a destiny community. And you found out that you were part of a community.
Within a community. Do they care about me? No. You know, but you can tap into it.
And people do start caring about one another when they feel like they're part of any community, whether it's a geographical community, an online, a real online community. I don't just mean a like. Mm-hmm. I mean an actual engaged community, whatever it might be. So
wrap it up.
I'm going to wrap it up. Again, my name is Mark LaFerrier. You can find me at markyourvote.ca. That's M-A-R-C, yourvote.ca. And from there, you can get my Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, all that good stuff. My Tumblr, which I really like. It's starting to rise up there. I have been very, very honored to be a part of many a conversation that's been recorded with my friend Robert. And I think that there's a lot of insight. And it's great that it's coming from our community, back to community.
Why not?
And it's great that it's coming from the Brantford Public Library today.
Big props to the Brantford Public Library. So thank you for being the reverse host for this episode.
I appreciate the opportunity.
So hopefully those of you that are listening to this got value out of this. So once again, this is the Disposable Web. We will talk to you later.
Keep on advocating.